This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Modernize and restore humanity. That's how the Biden administration describes its approach to updating the U.S. immigration system. During his first day in office, President Joe Biden signed a raft of executive actions on immigration. This included stopping construction on the border wall with Mexico and protecting DACA recipients. Now, the politics begin. Biden has sent an ambitious piece of immigration legislation to Congress. Among its many provisions is a pathway to citizenship for 11 million immigrants without legal status to be in the U.S. With Democrats in control of all three branches of government, could this be the time to pass comprehensive immigration reform? Joining me to help answer this question is Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. She's a Democrat whose district includes San Jose, California. Welcome back to 1A, Representative Lofgren.
Good day to you as well.
Well, the pathway to citizenship is the central component of Biden's immigration proposal to Congress. Explain how this would work and whether there's support for it across the aisle.
Well, we'll see. But I think it's not just that. There's a focus on that because we have this situation where we failed to deal with many essential workers who made the economy run. I mean, take a look at farm workers. Probably 80% of the farm workers are undocumented. If they all left, we'd have nothing to eat. So we do need to address this issue, but it really takes a look at a broad swath of the immigration code and asks this question: is this working for the United States? And in many cases, it isn't.
Can you just explain, how that authorization would work? So if people have been in the country without legal status, what would be the steps they'd need to take to gain citizenship?
Well, they would have to have a background check, go through a terrorist screening, pay back taxes, and wait for several years, keeping a clean record. There are, and then they would be able to get a green card, a legal permanent residence. So it does something else. A lot of people don't realize we did something in 1996 that really messed up immigration law. If you enter the United States without inspection, this was really overtly aimed at people from Latin America, and especially Mexico, and then you later become eligible under the existing system for a visa, you have to leave the country for 10 years. Well, the estimates are, I mean, if you go through an airport and overstay your visa, that prohibition does not apply. And so the estimate is, you know, there are millions of people who would have and are currently eligible under the existing system, but for this provision that singles them out.
And would this legislation address that?
Yes, it would. And I happen to know there's bipartisan support for that because I've talked to many, many members, including many Republicans, who realize this is just a counterproductive provision. It just frustrates the goal of the immigration law system.
Can you also lay out some of the other key components of this bill?
Sure. There are provisions that will allow for pilot projects to grow the American economy through immigration. What we have seen in the past is that if you apply an influx of immigrants in certain communities that are tremendously disadvantaged, it has the impact of stirring small businesses and creating economic activity that benefits the entire community. It also provides funding, and I think this is really important, to integrate immigrants and refugees into American communities. Right now, people come into the country from all over the world. They want to become Americans, but there's really no system in place to help them become Americans, to become acculturated, to understand what is expected of them. And I think that will be a wonderful thing for people who, after all, they want to come and become Americans. Let's help them become fully American. This is really, I think, the whole screen on this is how do we use the immigration system to benefit the United States of America. It has something in here which I think is very important for people who are getting their PhDs in certain arcane technical fields. Right now, we're educating people in, you know, some of the finest universities in the world, in the United States. having them graduate with degrees in computer science or artificial intelligence, and then we make them leave and go to some other country to start a business. That doesn't help the American economy. So it fixes that as well.
Now, the bill also expands the use of technology at the southern border instead of relying on the law on a wall. It provides some foreign aid to Central America. As I said, in the open, Democrats control both houses, but you need 60 votes to pass legislation in the Senate. Our Republican Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma said there is common ground for immigration reform, but Democrats aren't seeking it. And I'll quote him here. He says, quote, every person that's entered the country suddenly becomes a legal citizen here, no matter how they came. That's a bad starting point, to say the least. Where are you willing to compromise and add measures Republicans want, like increased security or deterrence at the border?
The process really is this. The House finds its common ground, and we send it to the Senate. And then the Senate, will look at it. Maybe they'll make some changes. I don't know. And then you have a conference committee, and you sort out the differences between the two bodies. I've talked to Lankford when he was in the House, and I think there is plenty of room to come together if people are eager to do what's best for the United States and improve and update. These laws, in most cases, the structure of the immigration system is what we did in 1965. No wonder it doesn't work in 2021.
When you're talking to your Republican colleagues, where are you finding common ground on this question?
Well, we had a big bipartisan bill last Congress having to do with farm workers. It was a bill that I drafted, and we worked for a year with Republicans and Democrats, and we had a big vote in Senate to the Senate. But then when the pandemic hit, they didn't do anything but approve judges and COVID bills. So I think we proved there was bipartisan support for that. We had bipartisan support for the DREAM Act. We had bipartisan support to even out how visas are allocated. Right now, I'll give you a good example. Western Europe has a population of about 200 million people. They have three times as many business visas, because it's allocated on where you're born, than the subcontinent of, which is India and Pakistan and the like, with 2 billion people. Now, how does that make any sense when the idea is it's based on merit? So this bill would go back to a complete merit system on the business-based visas. The business-based visas should be based on who's going to fill a place in our American economy that we need filled that we can't fill on our own. Right now, we're turning away COVID researchers. We're turning away physicians and emergency care nurses that we need. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, we got this tweet from Mark who asks, if someone were deported because of unlawful entry, would Biden's plan help them?
It could. It depends on the circumstances, and it's going to be on a case-by-case basis, on the basis of humanitarian need.
Well, this bill funds a $4 billion four-year plan to increase assistance to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. What is this money for, and what safeguards are there to ensure it's used for that purpose?
Well, that is actually, that part of the bill is pretty much lifted a bill that I wrote in the last Congress, the Northern Triangle bill. And here's the point. You've got thousands of people fleeing for their lives from these Central American countries. They're risking their lives to go thousands of miles to present themselves at the border. Wouldn't it make a lot of sense to go down to Central America and see what's happening there and stabilize the situation so people did not have to flee for their lives? So it's not just aid to deal with corruption and violence in those Central American communities, but also to help them stabilize economically, and then also to provide for processing and welcoming centers in Central America, and for those people who are refugees, to allow them to be settled not just in the United States, but throughout participating countries. people want to get away because they don't want to get killed. They might want to come to the U.S. They might want to go to Costa Rica. They just don't want to get killed. And so I think this should not just be a U.S. burden. This should be a Western Hemisphere burden. We ought to involve the U.N. We ought to involve other countries, especially in the Western Hemisphere. But the main thing is to stabilize that region so people don't have to flee for their lives.
Representative, there's a backlog of 1.3 million cases left in immigration court from the Trump administration. Now, these courts had a backlog before Trump as well. How would you like to see the immigration court system reformed? And we've got about 30 seconds here before the break.
Well, I have just written a bill. It's at Ledge Council now to change the entire immigration court system. It's really, it's a kangaroo court. And really to make them actual courts following the model of the bankruptcy courts, and the I think that that would bring some order to this system. It's been mismanaged from top to bottom. The judges are precluded from being judges. It's a mess and needs a complete reform, and I've got a bill I'm about to introduce to do that.
We're talking to Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. She's a Democrat whose district includes San Jose, California. She's working to help the Biden-Harris administration pass comprehensive immigration reform. We'll be back with more from her in just a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking to Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat whose district includes San Jose, California. She's working to help the Biden-Harris administration pass comprehensive immigration reform. Representative, Detention Watch Network counts 15,400 people being held in privately operated immigration detention facilities. Many immigration advocates would like to see privately operated detention facilities closed, but this bill doesn't include that. Why not?
It's my understanding that the detention situation is going to be dealt with on a different track. This bill just deals with the reform of immigration law itself. I do, however, agree. I've visited many of those privately held prisons. They're massively expensive. I mean, in some cases charge $700 a day, and they're completely over the top in terms of what's necessary. If you think about who are these people, they're civil detainees waiting for a hearing. I mean, some of these facilities are much more prison-like than, you know, the local jail we have here, where actual criminals are being held in detention. So it's too expensive. It's unnecessary. The profits that are being made are off the charts at the expense of the taxpayers. So we need to take a look at what's really necessary. Not everyone who's waiting for a hearing needs to be detained. What we need them to do is to show up for their hearings. And we had some different approaches that we were trying out that had tremendous success, like 99% attendance rate at your hearing. If you follow up with people and you have the capacity to put them in custody if they refuse to respond. But that works better and it's cheaper. We need to look at that. And to the extent that there is any need to have people detained, we need to look at the type of facility it is, and what we've got with these profit-making places is ridiculous. I think we ought to also take a look at some of the nonprofits who might be able to find a more suitable situation when people first get to the United States and need to be stabilized and then assigned a hearing so that they can follow through.
We got this suggestion from a listener. They tweet, a suggestion, state immigration goals in terms of growth. For example, we will grow the nation through immigration by 1%. How much thought are you giving right now to just the way we talk about immigration. It's an incredibly complicated system. We hear that from people who are in it often. But is there a larger, I suppose, reimagining of the way we explain this to the American people more broadly?
Well, I think about it. You know, I have been involved in looking at immigration for a long time. If you analyze the impact of immigration, not just on American society, but others, it is an economic boost. And that's true, I mean, throughout the world. So I think we need to think about this as, how does this serve the United States of America? I mean, my grandfather was an immigrant. You know, I'm not against immigrants, but I am an American legislator. And my job is to think about what's good for the United States. And it turns out immigration is very good for the United States economically. The last CBO score, Congressional Budget Office score, and on a large-scale immigration reform bill, estimated that it would add hundreds of billions of dollars to the gross domestic product of the United States.
Well, before we let you go, we know we only have a couple of minutes left here with you. Immigration advocates say it's not likely this bill will see any meaningful action in Congress until the end of the year. Are you more hopeful in your time frame?
Well, you know, we'll see. Our intention is to move promptly on the House side, and then obviously we'll be talking to senators. Senator Menendez is taking the lead on the Senate side at the request of the president. And, you know, at some point, if they don't take this up, we'll start taking pieces out of it and passing those. But I do think that if we want to do a good deed for the United States, we'll reform this system that basically is calcified in its framework left over from 1965.
That's Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. She's a Democrat whose district includes San Jose, California. Representative, thank you so much for your time.
Anytime. You take care.
We're talking about the potential for immigration reform with Democrats in control of both Congress and the White House. And I'm joined now by Michelle Hackman, an immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Michelle, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Erica Andiola, Chief Advocacy Officer for RAICES. It's a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of immigrants and refugees. Erica, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We also want to hear from you. What would immigration reform look like to you? And if you are an immigrant, what part of the system is most in need of an overhaul? You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. Monica emails, I agree that we definitely need reform. One, make Dreamers U.S. citizens. Two, provide work visas for the number of seasonal workers needed. Three, adhere to international laws in providing refuge to those seeking asylum who are persecuted in their own countries. Four, we use a point system to accept people with skills we need. And another of you tweeted, doing what we can to stabilize those Central American countries would be great, but more often it seems that our country destabilizes other countries. Well, Michelle, you were listening along to our conversation with a congresswoman there. Did anything stand out to you?
I think actually the final piece of what Chairwoman Lofgren said, where she said, you know, we're going to do what we can on the House side. I think she was acknowledging, Jen, that on the Senate side, Congress is dealing with, first of all, a 50-50 Democrat-Republican split, which is going to make things complicated, and also a totally different set of rules. You know, most legislation needs 60 votes to pass. There are probably pieces of this bill that can be passed through a budget process called reconciliation that would only take 50 votes, but the whole thing can't be passed that way. And so I think she was acknowledging some of the political realities, especially where she said, you know, if we can't pass this thing, we're going to start breaking it into pieces.
Well, we're getting lots of feedback from people listening in, wondering about Democratic opposition to this bill. They're asking, what reasons would a member of Biden's own party have to not support this plan? Michelle?
I don't think that the Democrats are not supportive of the bill. I think the problem on the Senate side is that there are only 50 Democrats, and typically you need 60 to pass, you know, the full bill. I think you could see the 50 Democrats take pieces of this bill and pass them. For example, We talked about that $4 billion going to Central America. That's something they could pass as a budget item. There's also talk of a way that they could try to do legalization through that budget process. Now, that's a little bit more uncertain, but that could take 50 votes. And I believe they probably would have the 50 Senate Democrats on board for that.
Well, we got this tweet from Rupert who says, I honestly, for the life of me, can't understand the logic of granting amnesty to those who have entered illegally. There's a reason Trump had such support for his immigration policy. There should be penalties for breaking the law, not rewards. Michelle, where is public support on increased immigration and immigration reform?
You know,
okay, we just lost Michelle's line. We're going to work to get her back. Erica, before we look ahead, I want to take a quick look back. When you think about the Obama and Trump administrations, what were some of the harms you think their policies caused to immigrants?
Oh, there was a lot of harms. And, you know, it's not necessarily comparable one administration to the other, right? We had Obama, who was trying to get immigration reform done, at least that's what he was, you know, promising. But what he was doing was, you know, enforcing and strengthening the deportation and detention machine, you know, while he tried to get immigration reform done, which was never done through Congress. And, you know, we ended up with millions of deportations. We ended up with millions of people in detention centers. And, you know, as far as Trump, I mean, you know, over 400 policies on immigration, you know, done through his executive powers, more than 400. I mean, right now, there's so much that the Biden administration is going to have to do to undo a lot of that harm. And, you know, from the asylum system to, you know, public charge, right, and trying to really harm in any way that they could the immigrant community. And so we have a lot that we have to repair from both administrations. And I hope that can happen, you know, under the Biden administration.
And Michelle, you're back with us now. I want to give you a chance to answer my previous question about public support on immigration and where that stands.
Sure. I was just saying public support has actually really improved on immigration, particularly since Trump has taken office. You know, polls show since 2016, support for immigration, the belief that immigration is helpful to our country, has grown markedly among Democrats and also among Republicans. And some polls even show that support for immigration is at the highest point sort of in the history of polling. So I think that that's actually what you're seeing the Biden team do is bet that polling is sort of a reality, that this is a good moment for them.
Now, Biden has halted deportations for 100 days. Erica, how would you like this administration to approach deportations once this moratorium expires?
Yeah, I mean, we saw, well, first of all, I think, you know, it's important that we acknowledge that, you know, this 100-day moratorium on deportations was a result of years and years of advocacy against deportations that happened under Obama and under Trump, you know, from the advocate community, the advocacy community. And now we have an opportunity to, you know, take this mandate, you know, that the president has on DHS to create a review process. And, you know, for us, what would be important at the end of this 100 days is to ensure that they're not longer taking the same approach that they did, right? That they're no longer deporting millions of us because, you know, a traffic stop, you know, because the police had somebody who was carrying pot, you know, somewhere where perhaps, you know, someone else who was a citizen would have gotten away with it. You know, it's just, to me, it's important that we start taking a different approach, and that I hope that the Biden administration starts taking a different approach to deportations. And not only that, that it's also important that we start dismantling the detention system. And what the memo doesn't do is anything, I mean, not much about detention, right? And so what ICE can do right now, and we know that this agency showed under Trump that they are pretty rogue. I mean, not just ICE, but also Border Patrol. it doesn't stop apprehensions, right? So people can still be deported, detained by ICE and put into a detention center. And so we're going to continue to, work on deportation cases and work with the community to show, the kinds of stories and the kinds of people that right now are being apprehended, detained, in hopes that the priorities, that they have right now are not necessarily as that they're no longer criminalizing people, right? And so we're going to continue to push beyond the memo that was released.
Well, we got this email from Margaret who says, we need to remember the part we play in supporting these violent cartels with our illicit drug demand in this country. Michelle, immigration is often talked about in push and pull terms, whether people are being pushed from their homes or whether our laws are attracting immigrants. Can you explain Biden's solution to Central American push factors, namely the reasons why people want or need to leave?
Yeah, you're hitting at a key difference between Presidents Trump
and Michelle's line dropped one more time, so we're going to work to get her back. Erica, in the meantime, President Biden has also halted the migrant protection protocol. Most people know it as the Remain in Mexico policy. For people who aren't familiar, what did this policy do, and what, if anything, is it being replaced with?
Yeah, so there's thousands of people right now who are waiting for their immigration court in the other side of the border, right? So you have thousands of people in Mexico that are waiting. And unfortunately, they have a huge percentage of these folks have asylum cases, and they are running away from either violence, extreme poverty. I mean, you name it, right? They're asylum seekers. And unfortunately, they're not able to come in, because Trump created this policy called the Remain in Mexico, or MPP, as others know it. And so we're really happy to see this undone. And also, as I mentioned before, we're going to keep pushing for more. And what that looks like for us is ensuring that we have a different system that expands, of course, asylum, but also that allows for asylum seekers to have a different experience when they're seeking asylum, right? That they're not being, we saw under Trump, but there was also some of that happening under Obama, where children and entire families were being placed in horrible conditions, right? In detention, this sort of what the public calls the cages. And that's still happening. And that can still continue to happen under Biden. And we're hoping that we are really a welcoming country, right? That we can find ways and work with the nonprofit organizations and individuals to help really find a better way of receiving and welcoming asylum seekers.
Michelle, you're back with us again, and you were explaining Biden's solution to some of the Central American push factors, the reasons why people may want or need to leave.
Yeah, I don't know where I got cut off, but I was saying that a lot of the people coming, across our border are from Central America. And those people are escaping, really endemic poverty, really deep gang violence. And Biden is betting, with this money that he's put in his plan, that he can help those Central American countries by sort of addressing some of those issues of poverty with job programs, with helping fight violence. And he's thinking of that as a solution rather than what the Trump administration called pull factors, which was, he thought our asylum system was too easy to game. He was making it harder to access. So those are just two different approaches.
We're talking about the Biden-Harris administration's approach to immigration. Today with us, Michelle Hackman, an immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and Erica Andiola, chief advocacy officer for RAICES. That's a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of immigrants and refugees. We're also hearing from you. Edmundo writes on Facebook, as an immigrant with DACA and an advocate for comprehensive immigration reform and former farm worker, I've known many undocumented immigrants who pay taxes, have a business, and contribute to their communities, like my parents. When Hurricane Irma passed through Florida, they got their food truck and gave away cooked food to families who didn't have electricity. I believe people like my parents should be getting a chance. Clara emails, it would be most helpful if immigration focused on merit and family unification. There's no reason why a mother or father should be deported when they have an American spouse and American children and have no criminal history. The penalty for breaking immigration law should be fines, not permanent separation from family. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in just a moment. Let's get back to our conversation about the policy, the possibility of immigration reform in a democratically controlled Congress. My guests are Michelle Hackman, an immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and Erica Andiola, chief advocacy officer for Raices. It's a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of immigrants and refugees. We're also hearing from some of you.
Levi Mendez. I'm a DACA recipient.
Hi, I'm a Canadian immigrant to the States. I live in South Carolina, and my husband is from Europe.
The times when people are getting catch and release and they're just coming to the country, they will be able to get a temporary Social Security card and workers permit. And what about the people that have been here in this country for 10, 20 years, have ITs and be paying taxes local?
It's just been like one nightmare after the next. Like currently, I can't even work in this country, which really frustrates me.
Yeah, no wonder there's more and more caravans coming over here when you're able to give people that just came here a temporary Social Security and temporary workers permit.
And on top of it, when we're finally approved, I have to go for a medical test, which I feel really uncomfortable about because you have to basically be naked in a room and a doctor has to check everything, even your genitals. And I've lived in this country for 7 years. I've had two babies here. Why is it necessary that you humiliate every immigrant who wants to come to this country?
Now, Michelle, Biden's immigration bill in Congress would replace the word alien with non-citizen in immigration laws. Practically speaking, what does this accomplish?
It's more about messaging, I would say, than really anything else. You've seen past administrations actually toggle back and forth in their uses of the words non-citizen and alien. The Obama administration tried to use non-citizen in all of its messaging, and you see the Biden administration doing that too. But as soon as the Trump administration took office, they took, you know, all references to non-citizen out of their statements, out of their public pages, things like that. And so I think it's alien is one of those words that started out as a legal term that's really become one of those things that is divisive and signals sort of which side you're on. Mm-hmm.
Erica, it's clear the Biden administration wants to change the language and tone around immigration. How important is this change to you?
It's very important. You know, as someone who grew up in Arizona undocumented, being called illegal alien or criminal or, you know, you name it. There's so many words that I have heard throughout my life, you know, growing up here in the U.S. It's important. And I think it's also important to ensure that we are changing the narrative even further, right? Not only, I think, using non-citizens and changing the way that folks, you know, who are undocumented or asylum seekers that are, you know, have a different, people call us a different name. It's good. Now, can we also ensure that we're not constantly being, you know, pinned against each other with the language of families? We're deporting, for example, felons, not families, right? Which is something that the Obama administration used a lot and that I've heard, you know, in some instances, Biden's administration also use it. And why this is important is because there's so much more complexity to it, right? You can't just say that you're deporting felons or you're deporting criminals because we know that the criminal justice system is also broken. And we also know that immigrants get criminalized all the time, right? For working without documents, for really... A lot of reasons, right? And so it's important that we go even further and that we acknowledge and understand that policy many times comes from narrative, right? And that to us is very important. Not a lot of reporters now use the word illegal because we started really raising awareness of how terrible it was for people to use the word illegal. And now a lot of, you know, news and reporters don't use that word. And that was very important. So I think it's something that we have to continue to work on and humanize people like myself and my family.
Here are some other messages we've received. David writes on Facebook, I remember an interview in which an economist was asked how we could save Social Security. He said, increase immigration. And Andrew emails, how is the Biden administration going to ensure that Americans are the priority in getting new jobs? What are the jobs? This is a prime source of resentment. Erica, your response to Andrea.
Yeah, well, listen, I think it's important to acknowledge that in this moment, in the United States, there's so much that needs to be done to ensure that there's economic equality in this country that we often blame the immigrant. And I often get blamed in my family and in my community for taking jobs or for coming in and taking the resources and the opportunities, but we don't acknowledge the fact that the richest in this country are getting richer, right? That there's people like the owner of Amazon, of Walmart, I mean, all these companies who kept getting richer and richer and get, you know, pay their employees, their employers so little. And so to us, to me, it's important to acknowledge that there are so many resources in this country, but unfortunately, they are being kept by people at the top. And so we can't just be fighting each other around that, right? We have to ensure that we're changing policies that are also helping working families in this country and not just blaming the immigrant as we've done for many, many years.
Michelle, how much of Biden's immigration bill is based around an economic argument?
That's definitely a piece of it. I mean, he's proposing some reforms to the legal immigration system that would make it easier, I would say, for what I would call high-skilled folks. It actually does a couple of things. For high-skilled folks to be able to stay in the country, you heard Representative Lofgren talk about this, where she said, you know, folks getting PhDs in STEM fields can more easily get green cards and stay in the country. It also looks at ways of creating more permanent pathways for what's typically called low-skilled folks. Now, you can disagree whether farm work is low-skill or not, but people like farm workers, people like restaurant workers who come seasonally and work here to be able to stay, because we do need those workers, and those jobs often go unfilled by Americans.
Well, I want to play you a voicemail we got from Isadora in Austin, Texas.
I'm hoping that Joe Biden does something about DACA and DACA's parents. I'm a Dreamer and a DACA recipient, but my parents are both undocumented in the United States. And like Obama tried to do something 8 years ago, I think it's time that the Dreamer's parents got a chance at a pathway.
Now, Biden's immigration plan includes a pathway to citizenship. Michelle, is there priority for DACA recipients or their parents?
I think you could say that, yes. I think the Biden White House does believe that Dreamers and giving a legal path to citizenship for Dreamers is probably the thing that could pass most easily. They think possibly it could get 60 votes in the Senate. I think they're thinking of maybe pairing that with legalization for farm workers in this country. There are about a million of them. The Obama administration tried to create a program where they were offering DACA-like protection, so deportation relief to the undocumented parents of U.S. citizens. And so, you know, that was blocked by a judge. And so I just am unsure whether you would see them attempt to do that again through executive action. But certainly that should signal that that would be a priority, too.
We're talking to Michelle Hackman, an immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Also with us, Erica Andiola, Chief Advocacy Officer for RAICES. That's a nonprofit organization that advocates on behalf of immigrants and refugees. Erica, earlier we mentioned the bureaucratic nightmare that is our current immigration court system. For people who've never had to deal with immigration courts, how does that system work?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely really long backlogs. There's long waits, as you can imagine. For example, we talked about people who are right now in, you know, stuck in the other side of the border in Mexico because of policies like MPP. They have right now to wait really long. I mean, sometimes people have to wait for years to be able to have their hearing in their asylum case. And unfortunately, you know, that got even worse with the Trump administration. And, you know, it's also important to acknowledge that a lot of judges, you know, right now, immigration judges don't have accountability. And many of them were actually picked by the Trump administration. Right. And so, unfortunately, a lot of our attorneys are always, you know, constantly frustrated because they have clients who have really strong cases, really powerful stories and cases. And even so, right, they don't get the opportunity to stay here. So there has to be more accountability around, you know, the judges and ensuring that, you know, there's one more thing I would say is that we also need to ensure that immigrants and people who are going to court have the ability to represent or to have representation, right? And that happens right now in the criminal justice system. You know, people can have representation if they don't have an attorney, and unfortunately, immigrants don't, right? So you have even kids and adults and families who go in front of a judge without any representation and with the inability to fight their cases. So there has to be a lot of changes on that front as well.
Michelle, on day one, Biden signed an executive order to end Trump's Muslim ban. Does this mean that people from these countries are now free to travel to the U.S., or are there still complications?
There are definitely still complications. You know, these countries, there is no longer a blanket ban on most of them, but these countries are some of the toughest countries to get a visa to go to come to the United States. And so, I mean, that's kind of a permanent barrier. I will say Iran, which is one of the countries that actually sent the most people to the United States before the travel ban was imposed, still has a more temporary coronavirus-related travel ban on it. You know, if you were present in Iran in the last 14 days, you can't come to the United States. And so, you know, it's not as simple as just reversing a travel ban and people being able to come tomorrow.
We got this message from Lou on Facebook who says, I just received my green card after 29 years. I've seen many presidents come and go, and none of them made a difference in the immigration process, at least anything substantial. The system as a whole needs a systemic reform. This plan is the best one I've seen in a long time. The history of the immigration system is unjust and made to exclude specific people from specific places. And Gretchen emails, I agree that immigration is an overall good for the U.S., but I want immigration to be managed with secure borders, controlled entry, and full documentation. There's nothing wrong or unkind about believing in the benefits of strict enforcement of immigration laws. When you look at Biden's plan, Erica, do you think it answers both Lou's concerns and Gretchen's concerns?
I think it does. I think there is a lot in this plan that it's going to, you know, really help folks who are here undocumented. It's going to help people who are seeking, you know, to migrate and to that are looking for home and safety in the U.S. And, you know, part of the plan that's not really something that I, you know, I'm excited about is the fact that they are adding more technology at the border. And, you know, my guess is that the reason why they're adding this security, you know, more security, I guess, to the border, even though we know that it's, you know, been secured for many, many years, is so that they can also get support from the other side. But to me, what's important is that we're not just talking about what's in the bill, because that's super important. Obviously, the detail is super important, but also I would love to know what the strategy is, right? And as the Congresswoman mentioned earlier, perhaps this is going to pass the House easily. You know, I don't know. That's my guess. But what's going to happen in the Senate and what we are really just pushing for is that there is also a strategy from the Biden administration, from Schumer, that they're going to use every tool at their disposal, whether it's getting rid of the filibuster, whether it is, you know, getting as much as possible through reconciliation. But we don't want to leave this year without a fix. And we have been, we've been promised and we've been let down for decades now in the immigrant rights movement. And this is the year where we expect for Biden and the Democratic Senate and the House to do something.
Michelle, Biden wants to reform the refugee system, and the plan is to try to bring in 125,000 refugees a year. 10,000 is the current cap. Do we have the infrastructure in place to increase refugee admissions? I mean, talking tenfold, or will there just be another bottleneck?
I'm going to go ahead and say no, we don't have the infrastructure. And that's partially because, you know, President Trump lowered that cap so drastically every year he was in office that the organizations, you know, there are these nonprofit resettlement agencies that get their money directly from the State Department per how many people they resettle each year. And so they've been shrinking and shrinking, and they are a crucial part of the, you know, of the pipeline. On the other end, the Trump administration actually stopped recruiting new refugees into the beginning of its pipeline. Our refugee program is probably one of the most secure programs, secure ways to get into this country. You know, it takes a couple years of security vetting. And so if you don't have people starting that process, it's hard to find people who have been vetted and approved to come in. And so it's going to take a while to scale up that number, and I think you'll see that reflected. I don't think we'll get to the 125,000 in this first year.
We've only got about 30 seconds left here, but Michelle, I want to make sure to mention that the Biden administration is expected to announce a family reunification task force, possibly later this week. What's the work ahead for them?
You know, there are about 600 children whose parents, you know, their whereabouts are unknown. And so I don't know exactly what the Biden administration plans to do, but I think it will take actually going to Central America, advertising, things like that to try to find those parents. And we'll see what happens with them next.
That's Michelle Hackman. She's an immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Also with us, Erica Andiola, Chief Advocacy Officer for RAICES. That's a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of immigrants and refugees. Erica, Michelle, thanks for being here today. Today's producer was James Morrison. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.